This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, I have a special show for you today, at least the first hour for sure. Enzo Ferrari, you know, he's the founder of Ferrari. He's a very interesting guy, and I know a lot of people know that there's a movie coming out. I think Tom Cruise is in it, and it's being made as we speak, and there's also going to be a mini-series because a friend of mine wrote an amazing book called Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. And until now, no biography has truly captured the entire scope of Enzo Ferrari's remarkable life and its impact on automobiles, motor racing, and Italian industry and culture. Luca Del Monte uncovers a wealth of new facts about Ferrari's origins, ambitions, business practices, and private life. And I have him on the phone with us right now, all the way from Milan, Italy. I'm holding this nearly 1,000-page book that is about 3 inches thick. What a magnificent book. I have just started reading it, and I said, oh, my gosh, we've got to have Luca on the phone. And, of course, I've known Luca for many, many years. I believe I met him when I was at a motorsport event with Pirelli one time somewhere in the world, and then of course, he went on to be PR for Maserati and Ferrari, and then eventually communications for Maserati worldwide. But he's worked with Peugeot and Toyota over in Italy and Pirelli Motorsports. And he's been in the industry a long, long time. But now he's put this book out into the world. It's available on Amazon. And the publisher is David Bull Publishing. And I know David Bull. He was in a horrible motorcycle accident. I hope he's doing well. I'm sure you've been talking to him. Luca Del Monte, everybody. Luca, how you doing?
Oh, hi, Alan. I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start out. How's David Bull doing, by the way?
Well, David is doing much better, yeah. Fortunately. Wow, he's been through a pretty tough time after the motorcycle accident, but he's been recovering, you know, steadily ever since.
Well, excellent. Anybody that knows these kind of books, these amazing automotive industry books that are about the history of our auto industry, David Bull Publishing does a great job of putting them out. I think he did your one on Maserati too, didn't he?
We did the Ferrari phenomenon.
That's
a long time ago. That was with Ferrari.
Okay, good.
The Maserati Centennial book we did with an Italian publisher, which in turn translated into English, French, and I think Chinese.
Well, you can also find all these different types of books we're talking about. Bullpublishing.com on the web. I got that right off the back of this book. This book must weigh 5 pounds. It took you how many years? Like 10 years or so? What is it?
It took me like 8 years in research.
Good Lord.
You know, some of the research I've actually started before I really began thinking about the book. Like, you know, people like Phil Hill. I took advantage of the fact that I could speak with them when I was at Ferrari North America. So like the project of the book was probably not there just yet. But I knew that I wanted to write something like this. So, you know, every time I took advantage of the fact that, you know, Phil and I had become, you know, friends through, you know, John Lamb and, you know, Thomas Brandt, you know, this great, wonderful U.S. journalist who knew him so well.
Right.
And I always try to, you know, cut out some time to talk with Phil about the good old days, you know. And Phil, you know, Phil spoke either English or Modenese, you know, which is the dialect from Modena. In those days, you know, all the drivers coming to Ferrari would learn to speak the local Italian dialect. That's Modenese.
Right. Well, Phil Hill, by the way, raced for Ferrari. And he was such an icon, an American racer. And there's so many little bits and pieces about Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari. One of them was that I just found out through reading the book here, beginning reading the book, was that Enzo Ferrari loved America but never came to America because Luca found out that he didn't like to fly and he didn't like elevators, evidently. We're going to explore this. So don't go anywhere. Luca Del Monte with us. He has written an amazing book. Once again, Enzo Ferrari, Power Politics and the Making of an Automotive Empire. We're going to spend a lot of time with you, and he is all the way in Milan, Italy. My friend Luca Del Monte. We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information. You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Special guest all the way from Milan, Italy is Luca Del Monte, author of Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. It's a whole story. It's the biography of Enzo Ferrari, but from a guy who spent a lot of time with Ferrari. Let's come straight to the point here. What was your fascination with Enzo Ferrari to write an almost 1,000-page book? And I know you put a lot more emphasis on the personal side of Enzo Ferrari, but Luca Del Monte, please give us kind of the genesis, the beginning of your journey to write what took 8 years to finish.
Well, you know, I was born in 1963. So like I came of age in the 70s and Enzo was alive and kicking in those days. Right. You know, he was 8 years old. A CEO of his company, and he was really big, like, you know, and like, you know, Formula One was really big in those days, and you could see Ferraris, you know, basically driving down the streets in here in Italy. And, you know, we became, you know, not only me, but my whole generation, we all became fascinated, not only with this, you know, road-going cars, with these racing cars, but also with the man. Like, you know, there was no day that newspapers didn't have a story on him. And I remember, like, the first, like, talk shows in Italy about, you know, motor racing, you know, go back 45 years, like, very beginning of this phenomenon. But, like, he would never be a guest, but he would be, like, calling in from Maranello and normally, like, you know, yelling with the journalists to defend his cars, you know, something that people just wouldn't do today, of course.
Right. Although, with what's going on in our world, you have a lot of yelling going on with the stuff, the politics from the president to guys like Elon Musk with Tesla. I mean, he's a little bit of an iconoclast like that, don't you think?
Well, I agree. There are some similarities there. But, like, you know, think of us, like, you know, we knew that this, I mean, he was like a demigod in Italy.
Right.
You know, I always said, like, you know, in Italy there was the Pope, and then there was, like, Enzo Ferrari. And, like, you know, and then the more I tried to find out about him, you know, the more I found, like, this wonderful success story in terms of his public life. But then, like, you know, there was so much tragedy in his own private life, you know, one son dying when he was only 23.
Well, wait. Let's stop right there. That would have been early in his life, wouldn't it? Maybe you could give us a little insight on that.
Well, you know, in 1956, you know, Dino Ferrari, whom a car and an engine will be named, you know, dies. He's only 24 years old. He dies of muscular dystrophy. And, you know, Enzo is, what, 58, but he's, of course, devastated. And there's actually one point in the, he dies in late June, and like in the summer of 1956, Enzo is like on the brink of taking the decision of stopping racing. Like he wants to, he says, like, you know, there's no more purpose in my life. I just cannot go on. And like, you know, he's really seriously thinking about, you know, giving up, not necessarily the company, but certainly the racing, like the fun part. And then, of course, he realizes as the summer gives way to the fall that, you know, in the end, his son would never have wanted for him to stop racing because, I mean, Dino Ferrari loved races. You know,
right.
He lived for them. And so he finally decides to go on. What Enzo does, however, is he himself stops going to races. He never again goes to any Grand Prix.
Wow.
For a number of years, he will still go to Monza for the Italian Grand Prix, but only for the practice, you know, the qualifying, but he never go again to a race. And this is to honor his dead son.
Wow.
And what is amazing in the life of Enzo, you know, there are a number of tragedies, of course, in his life. You know, his father dies very young. His brother dies in World War One, and then, of course, because of the chosen profession that he chose, you know, a lot of the drivers, you know, a lot of his friends, you know, die one by one. You know, in those days,
right.
The 20s, 30s, you know, that was really
in crashes. Yeah,
exactly. Very, very dangerous. But what is amazing in Enzo Ferrari's life is, like, you know, all these people, even though they die, they never really disappear completely from his life. Mm. Like, I mean, I talked to a lot of his, you know, intimates, and they all agree on, like, on the fact that no one ever died for real in his life. Like, he would talk about his son or about Tazio Nuvolari, who died in 1953, as if he had spoken to them just the day before.
Oh, I see. I mean, he kept them alive in spirit. Hang tight. I'm sorry. I'll take a commercial break. The podcast, we removed the commercials for the most part and sew it all together. You can hear this. We're going to continue on with Luca Del Monte, author of Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. Don't go anywhere. It is The Drive.
Don't miss the latest auto news, videos, and real-world reviews. Find us online at TheDriveWithAlanTaylor.com.
My dad is a proud doer, always building, repairing, or maintaining something. He relies on Craftsman tools, and I do the same. Today, Craftsman mechanics tools, metal storage, and lighting are available from your favorite retailers. But that's only the beginning. A full line of retooled and refined products are on the way. Find your favorite store at craftsman.com and stay tuned for more big news from this trusted American brand.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
You know, when I think about Enzo Ferrari, I always saw him with those Ray-Bans, a nice suit, a sharp-dressed man. A little ZZ Top in the background. Luca Del Monte, another sharp-dressed man, calling in from Milan, Italy, author of the book Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. We're talking about Enzo Ferrari. Ferrari, such an iconic brand. But to hear these stories and understand more about the entrepreneur that Enzo Ferrari was, and just the journey of this man to create this automotive empire that he did. And it's just amazing. Thank you so much. I know it's evening for you where you are in Milan, Italy, morning for us.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So I want to go back to where he started. Let's just give the audience here a little window into, you know, where did Enzo get his start in the automotive industry?
Well, he goes into World War One and gets to be like a driver of ambulances and other cars. So he develops this interest for cars. And once the war is over, almost like a whole generation of other people, and he wants to start a career in the automobile world. And he wants to be a racing driver. You know, in those days, you know, even automobile racing was even bigger than soccer here in Italy. So, you know, he wants to make it big in that. And so he starts driving for lesser-known car makers until in 1920, he is hired as a driver by Alfa Romeo. And Alfa Romeo is only beginning its history in those days. You know, it's only a 10-year-old company, basically. And he's pretty talented. He's not the most talented of all those Italian drivers of those days, but he's got some talent. So for some years, he starts his career. He wants to make it big. But there is one big question mark. He's afraid of dying at the wheel of a car. So by 1924, you know, when his career is just about to get really big with the participation to the first international Grand Prix, he basically runs back home. He leaves the team in Lyon, France.
Oh, my gosh.
He's back home. This is like, it's not really a secret because people knew. I mean, like, newspaper talked about this.
Wow.
Never really, really. And he, of course, never said why he had done that. The fact is that he basically had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, anxiety attack, and he ran.
Exactly. So this is one of those white gray spots in his life that, of course, I loved as a researcher to try to get hold of. And what I was really lucky in my research is that at one point, through private collections, I was able to read the personal correspondence between Enzo and his wife in the 1920s. And because, of course, there was no telephone in those – there was a telephone, and he had a telephone, but he didn't use it the way we use it today. You know, most of the exchange of information was done in writing, in letter.
Yeah.
And because he was always traveling and his wife was – sick, so she was like vacation, like on the Riviera or in the mountains, depending on the season. They would write each other a lot. And I was able, thanks to this correspondence, to basically retrace all that went on. And you can certainly speak of a nervous breakdown that basically made him flee from Lyon back to Italy. And the press is very vague about it. The press kind of say, like, you know, he was here, then he left. Nobody really knows why. But because I was able to read his personal letters, I was actually lucky enough to recollect the whole story.
Wow. And so with all those what we'll call artifacts, I don't know, whether, you know, proof and the letters, yeah. I mean, are those anywhere in a museum? Or, I mean, did you just, because you were working for Ferrari at, you know, some point in your life, you had access to the family? Or how did you get that? I mean, that's a miracle. You realize that?
I certainly did, yes. I was already thinking that I was on the right track before I had this strike of luck. This particular letters belong to a private collector.
Wow.
The name is Jacques Wauter. Jacques Wauter was a Belgian driver and then importer for Ferrari. He was a very close friend of Enzo's. And at one point, in not sure when, Enzo gives him all this bunch of letters. Jacques Wauter, he's dead, unfortunately, now, of course, but he had like one of the greatest Ferrari memorabilia collections in the whole world.
Wow.
And because of the job that I had, like, you know, being at Ferrari, I was able to meet people like Jacques and a lot of other, you know, collectors, even in the U.S.
Right.
And there's a lot of stuff. You know, you have to keep in mind that Enzo Ferrari was always thinking about the future. He just couldn't care less about the past. So, you know, he didn't keep his letters. The only thing he really did keep was like his agendas, his journals, on which he basically wrote everything that he did. Every day, sometimes like using code words.
Nice. All right, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to walk through the life of Enzo Ferrari. You can buy this book and you can check it out online at Amazon, of course, or just go directly to bullpublishing.com. Amazing book about the life and times of Enzo Ferrari by my friend Luca Del Monte. This is The Drive. We'll be right back. Revolution.
This one is a lie. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead. It's Dodge Performance Days, where that new car smell gets replaced by the scent of burned rubber. With Dodge Charger and its available best-in-class 485 horsepower, Dodge Challenger Hellcat Redeye with up to 797 horsepower and 707 pound-feet of torque, and the powerful 7-passenger Dodge Durango. Hurry in for great deals now at Dodge Performance Days. Warrants large regular car vehicle segment. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC. Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, The Drive with me, Alan Taylor, is brought to you by Kia's boldest SUV ever, the 2020 Telluride. Kia, give it everything, just like Enzo Ferrari did. Our show also brought to you in part by Brembo, the choice of champions. And I think Brembo and Ferrari go together so well, because I just have to imagine that those two words roll off the tongue and people know excellence from the very beginning. Luca Del Monte, my friend who worked at Pirelli, he worked at Maserati, Ferrari, he is the guy, even Peugeot, he is the guy that wrote the book we're talking about right now, Enzo Ferrari, Power Politics and the Making of an Automotive Empire. As you know, I also work for Entrepreneur Magazine. I do a radio show. I love the entrepreneurial spirit of Enzo Ferrari, but not all his entrepreneurial efforts were so well received by the public as Ferrari was as the car company. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. In 1920, okay, Enzo is only 22, and he thinks he knows enough to start his own coach building company in Modena. You know, Pininfarina and then Vignale and then, you know, Zagato and big, great names in coach building in Italy, starting their own activities in those days. And Enzo, at 22, he thinks he knows enough to start this company. The fact is that he doesn't know enough about it. And in 1922, so 2 years later, the company failed. There's a big, big failure. He has to close up everything. You know, his mother has to pay some of the debts that he's contracted. And which is acceptable. I mean, things do happen. You know, not everything you do in life is necessarily a success.
Right.
What happens in Enzo's life is that, you know, long before internet and everything else, he decided that he would never tell anybody about this.
Oh.
So this first entrepreneurial activity called Carrozzeria Emilia, which means, you know, Emilia is the region where Modena is in, and Carrozzeria means, you know, bodywork, was like Enzo's best kept secret. I did not uncover this, by the way. I was able to elaborate a lot about it, but this is something that until Enzo was alive, you know, nobody knew anything about, except, of course, his contemporaries who lived through this. So this 1922 Carrozzeria Emilia, big failure. And you know what the problem is? You know, like, you know, I understand why he didn't want to publicize this, but it's a big mistake that he made in the long run, because I think that this would have, if he had spoken about it, he would have shown that Enzo is one of the few people I've ever met that who did learn from experience.
Yeah.
You know, we normally say that we do, we really don't, but Enzo did learn from experience. You know, he loses a lot of money. So when the time comes in 1929, you know, 90 years this year, to start his next entrepreneurial activity, which is Scuderia Ferrari, the racing team, you know, not the company yet, but the racing team. He has the money, but he doesn't put it down. He's like a Broadway producer. You know, he gets money from somebody else. And it was very easy to get money from gentlemen drivers, which is exactly what he does. He's learned from experience. Never again bet your own money.
Right. Smart man.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He did learn from it.
He did.
And it's a painful experience. And you know what? What they say, no pain, no gain, you know? And he did have the pain, and he gained from it, and he was wise in the next venture. So Scuderia Ferrari Racing Team. That's awesome.
Exactly. 1929, first racing season, 1930. And this is very interesting because, you know, he doesn't make cars yet. He basically runs Alfa Romeos. Not only Alfa Romeos, he even runs Duesenbergs, you know, the American cars at one point. And keep in mind that this is not so easy in Italy. You know, in Italy, there is a dictatorship in those days, you know, the fascist. And yet Enzo couldn't care less. You know, he has Jewish drivers driving for Scuderia Ferrari, you know, like René Dreyfus. He was a French driver of Jewish faith.
Wow.
And he also ran British MGs and America Duesenberg. So, like, you know, by the 1930s, he's so established in what he does that he kind of get away, not necessarily with murder, but he does get away with things that other people in Italy just didn't.
And he was a very young guy. I mean, think about all that he had done by the time he was roughly 30 years old, and he was going against the establishment, you might say. I think it's brilliant. And listen, in those days, holy mackerel, you had Nazi Germany going on. I mean, you had some crazy stuff, you know? I mean, we have ISIS today, which is kind of crazy, but there was a lot of bad going on in the world in that time.
Oh, absolutely. And also, you know, do keep in mind that, you know, Auto Union and Mercedes were, you know, wonderful car producers, of course, and great teams. But they were partly financed, you know, by the Nazi regime. And Enzo would, not only Enzo, but in other entities, like even Maserati, you know, they would go against this, like, giant industries with a lot of experience, a lot of faith in what they were doing, but much, much less money.
Absolutely amazing. So let's move on to when he decided to start the company Ferrari and start building. I mean, I know that he had to build street cars to be able to, you know, homologate those cars to be on the racetrack. They had to have a certain amount of cars for the street in order to be able to actually race his cars. But what time was that? What was the period of time?
Oh, wait, he starts in 1940, basically. You know, we always refer as the birth of Ferrari 1947, which is correct, of course. You know, the first car named Ferrari with the Ferrari badge, you know, leaves Maranello in the spring of 1947. But he starts on his own in 1939, 1940, you know, when he's basically fired from Alfa Romeo. And for the first time, he finally has the money and puts down the money, and he is on his own. The first two cars that he makes in 1940, he cannot call them Ferrari because of a clause in the firing with the Alfa Romeo. And then, of course, World War II breaks out, so there is no more construction until 1947. And 1947 is when, you know, the tale of this great modern success called Ferrari really starts.
All right, well, hold on. Let's take a break. When we come back, of course, there was that Ferrari, even though it was a fake Ferrari in the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So I got the music going here. I mean, the real Ferris Bueller was Enzo Ferrari. We'll take a break. We're talking with Luca Del Monte all the way from Milan, Italy. His book, Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. Don't go anywhere. Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel costs, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com. Well, our show is brought to you in part by Subaru, the all-new three-row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Subaru. Our special guest all the way from Milan, Italy, my friend Luca Del Monte. The book, it's almost 1,000 pages. We're trying, you know, I mean, it's like we're spending a whole hour with Luca. And we're trying to get so much packed into this hour, but we're talking about almost 1,000 pages. Again, Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire, bullpublishing.com, or you can go to Amazon and just look up Enzo Ferrari. It's almost 1,000 pages. Amazing. There's a lot of personal stuff in this book about Enzo Ferrari and the tragedies that he went through in his life and the failures and the successes, and Luca doing a great job of just skipping a stone right now. We left off where he started, I think it was around 1947 when he started the Ferrari car, you know, automobile company. Maybe you can pick it up from there.
Correct. 1947, that's when Ferrari, the company, starts. And, you know, something we have to keep in mind is, you know, we love all those wonderful, you know, sleek road-going Ferraris. which Enzo could not care less for. You know, all he did care for was like racing cars. You know, Enzo was born for racing. And at one point, he was kind of basically forced to build passenger cars in order to have the money to keep on building the racing cars, which is also what makes Ferrari unique. Like, you know, a lot of the companies, wonderful companies, of course, out there, you know, they race in order to publicize their, you know, road-going production. Ferrari, it's always been the other way around, you know, and even today, by some degrees, you know, it's still the same philosophy. And it certainly was when Enzo started. You know, Enzo wanted to race. And in order to raise the money to race, he had to build those beautiful, you know, most of them Pininfarina design, you know, sleek Barchettas or Berlinettas or, you know, Spiders and convertibles.
That is awesome. All right, let's talk about Ferrari and his other son, because there is another son, you know, after Dino died. I really don't know whether he was divorced and remarried. Maybe you could give us a little bit about that and bring us into the future. Yes. A little bit.
Well, I think the love with his wife was, you know, gone very early on. Like, you know, they get married in 1923.
Right.
Dino is not born until 1932, but there is no love between husband and wife any longer. And by 1929, Enzo has a relationship with this wonderful woman who would eventually become the mother of his second son, whose name is Piero, who's a great person and who actually today is the vice president of Ferrari.
Wow. Right? And here, I got a story about Piero. About 10, maybe 15 years ago, I was at Pebble Beach Concours and they asked me, would you like to have an interview with Piero Ferrari? And I'm like, heck yes, of course. And so, like I'm doing this nice long interview with you right now, I did this wonderful interview with him. And it was fantastic. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to win an award on this thing. It was so great. And right as it was getting done and I was saying thank you, the recorder went dark. And you know, that many years ago, I was recording directly to a CD. And what happened is a car ran over the extension cord because we were on Pebble Beach on the green, on the 18th green. And I lost the whole interview. I was just,
no way.
I got nothing out of that. So anyway, I never got to have that interview. I wish there was some way of recovering that because today, you know, you can recover stuff. But back in those days, you know, it was what it was. But so now I want to get a new interview with Piero. Maybe you and I can interview him together. But anyway, so tell us just for a moment about Piero and just give us a little bit on him.
Piero was born in 1945, and he basically spent the first 20 years of his life in a very difficult situation, meaning that Enzo loved him from day one, of course.
Right.
But as long as Enzo's wife was alive, it made things difficult for Piero. Piero, of course, is a wonderful person, so he realized he was a very sensitive young man in those days, so realized that he had to be very, very careful. So Piero starts, you know, being seen on the side of his father in the mid-1970s when Laura, who's Enzo's wife, is still alive, but, you know, she doesn't go to the factory anymore. And absolutely, he becomes like the most trusted, advisor of his father in Enzo in the last 15 years of Enzo's life. At one point, he's also the head of the Gestione Sportiva, the GES, the racing department. And keep in mind that for Ferrari, as I said before, you know, racing is the most important activity in this company. And then, you know, toward the right before Enzo dies, Piero becomes, he's appointed vice president of the company, which is a position he still has today. But beside being the vice president, which is, you know, technically number two guy in the company, he's like the best ambassador the brand has. You know, Piero, who, by the way, is a great gentleman and helped me a lot on my book because we sat down for interviews. But he's the best ambassador that Ferrari the brand could ever have, you know. And he's loved by Americans. I mean, I had the pleasure of being with him most of the times when I was with Ferrari and he came to the United States, including possibly the day he did the recording with you, because it probably was 2004.
Yes, it was. I remember that because I remember you're the one that asked me that as you were saying that. All right, let me take a break. We're talking with Luca Del Monte. He is the author of Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. David Bull is the publisher, bullpublishing.com, and on Amazon. We'll take a little break. Don't go anywhere.
No one ever said, give it a bit. No one ever said, give it less. We say, give it everything. The world wasn't built by half measures, by the half-hearted. So when we set out to build our boldest SUV ever, we didn't hold anything back. Introducing the all-new Telluride. Kia. Give it everything. Expected spring 2019 in limited quantities.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now here's your host, Alan Taylor.
And special guest, my friend Luca Del Monte. It's just such a funny thing that, Luca actually is the one that brought Piero Ferrari over for the interview. And we've known each other about 20 years, and he has this amazing, almost 1,000-page biography, and a biography in the truest form that it ends with a funeral of Enzo Ferrari. And if you love biographies, if you love Ferrari, and you're an entrepreneur, this is the kind of book, you know, that you can read and learn from. But it's an interesting, amazing, beautiful story, well written. So far, I mean, I'm glued to this book. It's one of those things that, you know, when you see somebody that is passionate about what they're writing about, like Luca, you did such a great job of writing this book. And it shows in the way that you wrote it and the way that you laid it out, an 8-year effort. How do we, in the last 5 minutes here, wrap up some of the history of this man, Enzo Ferrari?
Well, let me just say that he lived until he was 90, and he was basically at the helm of his company until like a month before he died. Like, you know, he never really, like, you know, delegated much power to anybody. Of course, his son, as we said earlier on, you know, helped in the last 15 years. But, you know, he remained very much central to the everyday activity of Ferrari until the very end. And he died in 90. And what is really interesting is, like, I mean, I've been promoting the book in Italy for the last 2 years. I've been promoting the book in the U.S. and even in Mexico, because there is also a Spanish edition. And what is amazing is, like, you know, this man has been dead for 30 years, but he feels so much alive. I mean, I find people who love and remember and treasure whatever memory they have of Enzo Ferrari still today. I mean, everywhere I go, I mean, I'm very happy because, of course, you know, people are interested in the book. But what is really amazing is the interest in the man, in Enzo Ferrari, the man. Whether I'm in Italy or I'm in the United States. Amazing. Mm.
And in looking back, was there one thing that you found along the way that just made you go, wow? I mean, like, out of this history, you knew Ferrari, you know the brand, but you got to learn very intimately a lot about this man by researching his biography. Was there one or any couple of things that made you just really go, wow?
Well, there's one thing that I loved. It's like the fact that, you know, there is a reputation of Enzo as being a womanizer, which is partly true. But trying to go to the origins of this to understand why, you know, I formed the idea that he was a romantic. He was a man looking for true love. He thought he found it very early on when he met and married Laura. And this, of course, was not the case. And I think he spent most of his life, you know, yes, of course, building his own company and his own legend, but also looking for, like, true love. You know, at one point in the late 50s, he loses his mind for this beautiful 26-year-old girl. It's more than midlife crisis, if you ask me. And I read the letters that he wrote her, because I was lucky enough to also interview her before she died, 2011, for the book. And you could feel like there was the same passion that that he had put into the letter to his wife in the 1920s. So I formed this idea that, you know, no, he was not necessarily a womanizer. He certainly loved women, but what he was after was like true love. Did he found it? Not necessarily. And this makes for a very tragic figure, if you ask me. I always say that, like, you know, if they had been contemporaries, you know, probably William Shakespeare would have written tragedy about Enzo Ferrari. No Hamlet, but Enzo Ferrari. He was such a great man with unconfessed passions.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. A fantastic book authored by Luca Del Monte. You can find it at Amazon, bullpublishing.com. Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. Luca, thank you so much. I cannot wait to finish reading this book. It's about 3.5 inches thick. It's a great coffee table book. Enzo, I called you Enzo. Luca, I'm looking at Enzo's face while I'm saying this. Luca, you're the best, man. I can't wait to see you in person again.
I hope to see you soon again, Alan. Thank you so much for having me. You know how much I'm tied to the United States. You know, both of our kids are in the U.S.
Yep.
in college now. So, you know, the bond with the United States, you know, grows stronger and stronger with the passing of time. So I'm really, really happy to have been a guest of your wonderful show. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in person soon.
Very good. Luca Del Monte. Enzo Ferrari, Power, Politics, and the Making of an Automotive Empire. I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive. There's more after the news.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
The big news from Subaru is the all-new 3-Row Ascent. It's the biggest SUV from Subaru ever. There's room for 7 or 8 passengers with a choice of second-row captain's chairs or bench seating. It'll tow up to 5,000 pounds. It has the interior space you need for your whole crew. And it gets you where you want to go with the safety of a Subaru, including standard symmetrical all-wheel drive. The all-new 3-Row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Maximum towing capacity varies by trim level, and trailer brakes may be required. See your retailer for details.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we spent the first hour talking about Ferraris. How about now Richard Rawlings from Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel, Gas Monkey Garage. I met this guy when him and Dennis Collins did the Cannonball Run, that New York to L.A. ride in a Ferrari, and set the world record at the time. I don't know. Has anybody ever broken that? Do we actually know Richard?
Hold on, Alan. It's a nice day here in Texas. I get my lunch out. There it is. Nothing like a cold beer.
Oh,
but there's a couple of people that have claimed to broke the record, but they hadn't really come forth with the amount of evidence. So
right.
If they have, God bless them. If they haven't, who cares?
I know. Well, I know you didn't catch the first hour because you were busy, but the first whole hour was on Enzo Ferrari. And it's funny. I know Dennis still has that Maranello, wasn't it? Like a 575 Maranello that you guys ran in?
It was a 99-550 Maranello.
550, yeah. Well, I mean, no better, more fast, fun car to drive from coast to coast than a Ferrari, right?
Especially with a 6-speed in it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's talk about the world of Richard Rawlings. Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel, a new season starting in June, but more recently, it seems like the first episode or so of for the next season of Garage Rehab just kicked off, right?
Yeah, we just kicked off our second season on TV, and we should start filming the third season any day now. We're just waiting on the call.
Yeah.
But Garage Rehab's a pretty cool show, and we're really getting to help these people out. It's got a lot of eyeball candy because, well, car guys are naturally hoarders, so you go in there and you start digging through the rubble, and you never know what you're going to find.
You know what? It's so true. I have vehicles that I've had for 15, 18 years. And it just seems like I just got them like, you know, a couple of months ago. But my wife's like, why don't you get rid of that piece of junk? I'm like, wait a minute. That's a relic. That thing right there is valuable. And it's like, to me, it's all valuable. And people say I'm hoarding cars. But I don't think it's considered hoarding when it's cars. I think it's hoarding when it's like newspapers and junk. But these are cars, man. These are classics in the weight, you know?
That's what they say. But when you got a bucket full of rear doorknobs for a 72 Nova, you don't need them.
Well, again, that's junk. Okay, I get that part. But, I have like El Camino. I've got some interesting vehicles that one day I want to do. You know, I just picked up a Blazer, a 1974 Blazer with a full removable hardtop. So it's a full convertible truck. You know, that to me is a classic collectible item. And, you know, to some, they go, oh, it's just an old crappy Blazer. No, what the old crappy Blazer is the newest Blazer that Chevrolet just made. I don't even know why they even called that a Blazer. It doesn't look like a Blazer. It looks just like another SUV on the road. The Blazer, just like the Bronco, Ford Motor Company, in my opinion, and you can weigh in on this, they're bringing back what I think all of us are hoping will be a Bronco, which is what we remember. But that Blazer they just showed is just this... It's just another SUV. You know, it's not the same thing. What do you think about the new Bronco? Have you seen it yet?
I've seen some renditions of it, but I haven't been able to gauge the actual size. If it's a smaller size Bronco, more like a four-door Jeep or something like that, that's going to kind of suck. It needs to be a big truck Bronco. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, you know, they've shown it to us, believe it or not, they showed it to the journalist underneath a car cover that was skin tight, like a latex almost over the whole thing. So we could see that it's, you know, it's kind of like a cross between the original Bronco of the late 60s and kind of the next iteration. I think it's in between. It slots in between. It'll be a nice size vehicle. Still, we don't know what it's going to be powered
by. Is it big like a 78 Broncos or the OJ Bronco, or is it smaller?
No, it's going to be like a little bit smaller than those, but bigger than the first gen. So it's going to be interesting. Killer. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. All right, so...
I need to tell the guys at Ford to give me one so I can gas monkey it up.
Exactly. Well, listen, I think we have a little bit of time to wait, but I'll hook you up with those guys. They're good guys. Let me take a break here. We'll take a quick break, come back with more. Richard Rawlings, everybody. Gas Monkey Garage, Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel. And, of course, the second season of Garage Rehab just started. A lot to talk about here today with Richard. A new SEMA vehicle coming. Gumball 3000 over in Mediterranean. I mean, just a lot of stuff. This is The Drive. We'll be right back. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Shout through the heart, and you're to blame, darling. You give love a bad name.
Well, here he is, Richard Rawlings, Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel. Garage Rehab, second season just started in June.
What's going on?
Hey, man. In June, Fast and Loud going to be back with another season. So what is top of mind for you right now? What are you excited about? The Gumball 3000? I heard you're going to be doing that.
You know, I partnered with Hot Wheels, and we've got the Hot Wheels Midas Monkey that we built for them. And we're going to ship that thing over to Mykonos, Greece, where we're going to start. And we're going to run all around the edge of the Mediterranean all the way to Ibiza. It's about 3,000 miles and 7 days of partying. And I don't know that those eight countries we're going to go through are used to a blown big block four-speed Corvette that's highly weirdly proportional. And it's going to be a blast, you know, and I'm going to throw Dennis in the co-pilot seat, and we're going to go over there and have some fun.
So now, are you going to be filming all this? Is it going to be social media around this? Is it part of the show or fun?
We'll have all of it. We'll have our social with us doing live, and we'll be filming it for Fast and Loud. And you know, we're just going to have a good time doing it.
Speaking of social media,
it's been a while since I've done rally, so I got to get my rally shape back.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Well, that's where you and I met about 12, 13 years ago. Hey, so speaking of social media, how big is the imprint or the footprint of Richard Rawlings and Gas Monkey, the brand? I mean, you guys must get a lot of hits and likes and, you know.
It's pretty crazy. We're represented in over 120 countries and translated into 27 languages. You know, we're the number one automotive motorcycle lifestyle brand that's out there worldwide. And let's see, Gas Monkey last year, just the Gas Monkey Garage, we did about 2.9 billion impressions. And huge. But, you know, the reason that we're able to do that is it's real. We're not buying visitors or buying followers. We're interacting every day. I've got another company that I own that has all the people in there picking all the right stuff to talk about. You know, I personally probably tweet and Instagram and answer questions and all kinds of stuff daily basis. And we just keep the community involved and having a good time and watching what we do. And on a daily basis, it's got about 7 or 8 people in that room.
Good Lord. You know, it's funny. I used to be a body and paint guy, and I used to, you know, tear into cars, and I was the guy working. And then at a certain point, I made enough money to where I hired a couple of guys, and then they were working, and I was making decisions. And then it continued to evolve from there. And I was out looking at my gigantic toolbox the other day, and I thought, I don't think I even opened a drawer but once or twice to get a screwdriver out in the last year. And I thought, oh, my God. Everything that I love, I don't even do anymore. I just drive the cars. I make a decision on the phone sometimes to buy a car. Isn't it interesting how your life evolves from working with your hands to working with your brain, you know?
I absolutely get it. And, you know, I also put those people there to protect me from what I call fingering myself. You know, you get excited, you're at a party, you're somewhere else, and you send out the wrong thing, or you're mad, you send out the wrong thing. So I got what I call a clearinghouse, and I send the message to my clearinghouse, and they check the background for competing brands that I don't endorse and turn it into sellable language, you know, instead of me just posting something that says, I love this place, you know. they turn it into something else.
They probably got a beep on that one, by the way.
Exactly.
Right, so we have to do the same thing, right? That's funny.
It helps me keep me out of trouble, so to speak. But you know, when we're talking, it is me. It's us taking the pictures and getting out there, and we're increasing that every single day. As a matter of fact, we will have our own podcast here in about another 3 months, probably.
Come on.
Yeah, we're gonna jump into that full fledged. We're building a 10,000 square foot second story on the building that I'm calling the white trash penthouse, and we'll be coming live from the WPT here pretty soon.
What did you call it? The white trash,
penthouse.
Is it at Gas Monkey Garage? Is that where it is?
It'll be live here at Gas Monkey Garage.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? And you got to keep evolving. You got to keep evolving your brand. You've done that with like the energy drink, with the Gas Monkey Bar and Grills. You've continued to evolve, and now a podcast. So, I mean, that'll be your chance to interview me, brother. I'm going to be waiting my turn.
Oh, I can't wait. But, you know, we've got 4 shows now on Discovery, and I've got some really, really huge news that's going to come out later in the spring that is just going to be very, very cool. It's going to kind of come out of left field for everybody when they see what we're doing.
All right.
It's going to be really, really exciting. And we got the monkey trap all built up over here, and we've got Monkey Yard where I've been collecting all these outdoor signs. You know, we still see, you know, even on a somewhat cloudy, rainy day today, we'll get, you know, a few thousand people through.
Oh my gosh.
Come see what's going on and drop by and have a burger down the street at the Gas Monkey Bar and Grill.
That is all awesome. All right, hang tight. A birthday coming up for Richard Rawlings. Hey. Here he is. Yeah. A Gas Monkey Garage, Fast and Loud. We're going to talk about his SEMA vehicle he's building, his birthday, whatever else he's got up his sleeve right after this. It is The Drive. Don't go anywhere. My dad is a proud doer, always building, repairing, or maintaining something. He relies on Craftsman tools, and I do the same. Today, Craftsman Mechanics tools, metal storage, and lighting are available from your favorite retailers. But that's only the beginning. A full line of retooled and refined products are on the way. Find your favorite store at craftsman.com and stay tuned for more big news from this trusted American brand. You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show is brought to you in part by the brand new Kia Telluride, the boldest SUV ever. Kia, give it everything. Richard Rawlings is on the line, Gas Monkey Garage, Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel. Richard, a birthday coming up. I don't mean I'm watching you. When I first met you, your hair was all dark, and it's now starting to look like mine, a little more silver in it, of which I personally, I like my silver hair. I've earned every one of them. What about you?
That's right. It's not a birthday. It's the birthday. It's 50 years old.
Woo-hoo!
I'm not sure what we're doing yet. I know that my boy Dennis Collins owes me a little something on a bet, but
yeah.
I don't know if it's pulled off. When we were younger, we sat around and said, who do we want to play our 50th birthday? And he wanted Motley Crue, and I wanted Kid Rock. And if you recall, a few years back,
I was there.
I had Motley Crue play for Dennis for his birthday. So the pressure's on him now.
Well,
the sad part is I think Kid Rock's more expensive than Motley Crue.
Now, do you know Kid Rock?
You know, I've met him in passing, but I wouldn't say that I know him at all. I mean, I'm just like, hey, what's up? You know, I wish I did. He's a super cool cat from everybody I've talked to that does know him.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, sir, please come hang out for my birthday and I'll build you a car or something.
There you go. All right. So listen, I know people that know Kid Rock. So me and Dennis will have to talk, see what's going on with that. So the big 5-0. Whew, man.
It's been a rough, crazy, wild, fun journey. I wouldn't trade a second of it. And it, you know, even the bad seconds.
You know
there's
what?
A few of those.
It's true.
Life.
All things work together, as they say, right? All right. Let's talk about kind of the auto industry's Super Bowl is probably SEMA every year, the Specialty Equipment Market Association trade show. It's in Las Vegas, and you usually have a pretty good something going on there because of the fact that, you know, those are all your sponsors, all your peeps are all there. What are the plans for this year at SEMA?
Well, you know, we'll be out there like usual, and I'll be working with some of my brands, you know, whether it's Dickies or Advanced Auto Parts or what have you. But the big thing is we're going to be bringing a car out. I was hoping to get it finished, but since we're doing it in raw metal and everything else, it might be sitting there in raw metal. But unlike a lot of cars that get brought out there in raw metal and what have you, this car's going to drive at the time. It's going to be finished, just ready to be blown back apart and get finished painted.
Mm.
And it's a 72 boat tail Rivian.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you what I'm going to do, but if you know anything about the brand new Corvette ZR1s and the way they look and their carbon fiber appointments and the fins and the back and the diffusers and all that kind of stuff, just kind of imagine that morphing into a 72 Riviera boat tail. And the reason that we are doing it that way is because the Riviera was always billed as the gentleman's hot rod. So we're making the ultimate gentleman's hot rod. We'll be pushing somewhere around 1,400 horsepower. K-Tech is building our motor. Chris Dawson Chassis Works worked with us on the chassis, and it's got full independent rear suspension also.
Oh my God.
And it's going to be a wicked beast.
I can only imagine. All right. Well,
and it's our first attempt at building a SEMA car for SEMA as opposed to for a vendor or what have you and them having it at the booth.
Right. So this is a Gas Monkey build for the purity of being representing you and your brand, Gas Monkey. How cool. That's great. All right, give me about a minute and a half on what happened to that Ferrari F40 that you and Dennis built and sold at Barrett Jackson. I saw it was like, I don't know, the government took it or something from the guy that bought it. Do you know anything about that?
Well, he got himself in trouble and he forfeited it. And so it went to auction and me and Dennis flew out and took a look at it and it was in perfect shape. I figured it might be rock chipped and a little beat up, but it was actually exactly the way we sold it, plus about 1,500 miles. And then we were going to bid on it, but it ended up going for, I think, 730 grand.
Wow.
which is just a testament to, you know, how good a car we built.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing for me is that we built a faster, better, leaner, meaner, better weight distributed Ferrari F40 than there is out there. And I don't care who you are or what F40 you have, come drive that car and you'll agree. It's insane.
What did it sell for at Barrett-Jackson? It seemed like it was about that much money.
Randy Jackson bought it for like $630 plus the juice. So, yeah, right around
$700. Wow.
And then what I heard about the guy that forfeited it is he paid $800 for it.
Ooh.
So it's hovering right there in that mark. Now, sure, some of them are selling at $1 million and $1.1 million. But, you know, this car is super special. It's got a lot of history, but you do have to know that it was totaled at one time. So it does hurt the value of tax.
But you know what?
But I've also taken apart some real ones that have never been touched, and they are rougher than a stucco bathtub underneath.
That just don't, like you said, the fact that the thing was totaled and you guys rebuilt it, and at a government auction where stuff gets pretty much given away, it still brought big money. It's a testament to you guys. Really, truly is. All right, tell the world.
Well, you know, that car was ahead.
I was going to say, tell the world before we go here how they can find you, the best way to find you, Facebook. Where do you send people?
Okay, I'll give you Alan Taylor's personal cell number.
Yeah, right.
No, it's GasMonkeyGarage.com, GasMonkeyEnergy.com. GasMonkeyTequila.com, you name it, all the same things under Instagrams and Twitters and Twitches and Facebooks and YouTubes and what have you. And, you know, we welcome anybody to stop by when we're open. Come by here. You know, we can't guarantee you that you'll see us, but we're always working every single day.
There you go.
So if you're planning a trip, come through Dallas and hang out.
There you go. Again, current season of Garage Rehab, season 2 on now in June. The new season of Fast and Loud on Discovery Channel. That's Richard Rawlins. Richard, thank you, brother. Appreciate the time today.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. And we're going to come back with BJ Colleen right after this. It is The Drive.
It's Dodge Performance Days, where that new car smell gets replaced by the scent of burned rubber. With Dodge Charger and its available best-in-class 485 horsepower, Dodge Challenger Hellcat Redeye with up to 797 horsepower and 707 pound-feet of torque, and the powerful 7-passenger Dodge Durango. Hurry in for great deals now at Dodge Performance Days. Warrants large regular car vehicle segment. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
BJ Colleen joining us right now, and our show is brought to you in part by the new Kia, the boldest SUV ever, the 2020 Kia Telluride. Kia, give it everything. BJ Colleen joining us. Yes, BJ always has the fun and interesting news, like who's in jail, who's getting a loan on their house, and which car company ran over something when the forward collision warning system didn't work so well. Where do we start, BJ?
Whatever, whoever I am, it doesn't matter. So, I just want to complain. That didn't sound like disco music to me that you were playing earlier.
Oh, wait a minute. First of all, do you want to talk about your escapades on the disco cruise?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that Scott and I took a disco cruise, which was an absolute crack up. I mean, if somebody really loves disco music, it was the place to be because you're on a ship. Which is one thing, you know, we didn't really care where we went. We ended up going to Cozumel, and that was cool because my brother lived there, so I got to visit him. But the bands that we saw were just absolutely incredible. We saw the Tramps and Yvonne Elliman, and we saw Kool and the Gang and Casey and the Sunshine Band. So we really went for the music, and the music did not disappoint. Those guys still rock it out. So I think they're doing a cruise next year. If anybody loves disco music and they're interested in doing it, they got to check it out. So
I'm trying to see if I have any disco music here on our list. And
probably
you know,
not. Nobody plays disco music anymore.
No, I'm like looking. Like the closest thing I have is like MC Hammer, Too Legit to Quit. That's not even disco.
No.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. I think this could be some disco music. I don't know.
I don't think that's disco.
Anyway,
we got back to the real world, you know, that came back from the 70s, which is smack dab into the 2000s, you know. So
yeah, right. So there's a lot of bizarre stuff in the news. Let's just take a few minutes and run through it. First of all, how do I say this? Because there's a guy out there in this automotive world named Elon Musk. And I think the average person doesn't really give much thought to this guy. He's an entrepreneur. He's a hardcore kind of a serial entrepreneur maniac kind of a guy. But I think to be an entrepreneur, you got to be on the lunatic fringe anyway. But this guy, I mean, he has done some wild and crazy stuff. And some of it you can applaud and some of it you kind of go, what the hell are you thinking? So where are we today?
Oh, well, you know, Elon Musk, and I, you're right. I mean, people know him more for the Tesla car company that he's been doing with all electric vehicles. And, you know, he definitely, you know, and being on, you know, smoking a joint on, you know, and seeing a picture on Twitter, he's just all over the map. And so he's just one of these guys that you either love him because he's crazy or you hate him because you don't know what the heck he's doing. So right now, nobody knows what he's doing. And I don't even know if he knows what he's doing, because recently he took out $61 million in mortgages on 5 properties in California. Woo. Because he's got to start getting some money in, you know, to the company. He's got all these grandiose ideas, but they're still losing money. As a matter of fact, Tesla's stock is down 11% so far this year. Ooh. So, yeah, so it's not looking really pretty. But he, you know, because apparently, you know, he talked about how the Model 3 was going to be $35,000 and it's actually $42,000. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on with the company. I think people understand if you buy an electric vehicle, they have something called a federal income tax credit for U.S. Right. buyers. And, you know, but the problem is once you reach a certain production, which is 200,000 units, you don't get that tax credit really anymore. You might get a reduced version of it, but you don't get that. It's really up to 7,500. You just don't automatically get a check for $7,500. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
But so now he's actually hit his 200,000 vehicle last year. So his tax credit is pretty much going into a phase out mode. So that huge benefit that you were supposed to be getting from him, you're not getting that anymore. So that's one thing. So the other thing is, so he's taken out all these loans. I think he got a 3.5% loan rate. So he's not doing any better than the rest of us, which is good to know. But another thing that happened is just, I think a couple weeks ago, Consumer Reports pulled its recommendation of the Tesla Model 3, saying that it has issues with body hardware and the in-car electronics and the rear windows cracking from the cold. So there's some problems there. The Consumer Reports said, we're not recommending this car anymore, which is not a good thing when your stock is down. Ooh. So not only is he borrowed money, but he's losing, you know, the tax credits. His stock is down. Consumer Reports took a dump on him. And even the customers are saying that they're having trouble getting their deposits back, because they're not responding. The company is not responding to them. So it's a little bit of everything piling on now. And I think he's realizing that, hey, it ain't just about building cars. It's about having to run a business. And I don't think he wants to run this business. He's like what you said, the consummate entrepreneur. He started this and he's going to go off and do something else. You know, he wants to do his trucks and the autonomous trucks, and he wants to do his SpaceX program. And he's got all these hands in the fire, but he's not really controlling any one thing. So it's kind of interesting what's happening, and we're just going to have to wait and see what's going on, you know, with him, because truthfully, he wants to have a production run of 500,000 models a year. And that's a lot, you know, when you think about it, 10,000, building 10,000 vehicles a week, we're talking, you know, Ford and GM kind of stuff. So I don't know if this guy's going to be able to pull it off, but it's certainly been fun watching him. What do you think?
You know, it's funny because I go back and forth on Musk. One minute, I kind of like him and I kind of respect him because, as you know, I work with Entrepreneur Magazine and I kind of love the crazy, like I said, lunatic fringe entrepreneurs where they're just almost insane and you almost go, that guy needs to be put in a straitjacket. And then all of a sudden they pull something off and you go, oh, my God. And you kind of got to be that much of you know, on the edge kind of a person, because the bean counters would always say it'll never work. You can never do it. And I think if it was, we all listened to the bean counters all the time, our world would be a different place. So I respect him in some ways, but in other ways, what I don't like is the way he runs off at the mouth. And I think that our mouth, you know, can really get us in trouble. And he is one of those guys that he has said too much and promised too much and not delivered on it. And, you know, and now he's catching himself right in the middle of promising too much and not being able to deliver, and it's starting to kind of snowball effect on him. And then, you know, being on Joe Rogan's show and smoking pot and drinking whiskey and all that, that doesn't give confidence, you know? I mean, it does to the 26 and 28 and 30-year-old young people going, that dude's cool. But, you know, to us baby boomers, we're looking at that going, uh-oh, Houston, we've got a problem. Anyway.
You know, what's interesting is with all the he uses his shares to obtain his personal loans. And about 40% of his stake in the electric car, you know, in his company was already pledged at the end of 2017. So things go belly up. He doesn't have 40% of his company, you know.
Oh,
so
my God.
I'm not sure what he's doing, but we'll just sit it out and wait.
That's it. It's fun to watch. Yeah. All right. We'll take a little break. We're going to come back. I'll hear more about what's going on with Carlos Ghosn. He's not going to jail. He's been in jail. Maybe BJ's got some news on what's happening with the chief of Renault and Nissan. This is The Drive. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel cost, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com. Well, it is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor with BJ Colleen. Our show brought to you in part by Subaru, the all-new three-row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Check out the new Subaru Ascent. It is at dealers near you. From disco to country, that's the way we roll around here. I got all kinds of weird music. BJ Colleen, let's talk a little bit about Mr. Carlos Ghosn, who's, I don't know whether he's still in jail. I haven't followed for a week or so. What is going on with the guy?
Carlos Ghosn has been in jail for 4 months, if you can believe it. 4 months. And yeah, if you haven't been following the saga of Carlos Ghosn, he's a former Renault Nissan chairman and 4 months locked in a Japanese jail. And we'll talk about that in more specifics. But what's interesting that this case really did is bring to light what goes on when you get arrested in Japan. And I think most people thought that the Japanese law was kind of close to American law, you know, where you had good representation and you could see your family, but it is absolutely not like that at all. It's kind of like the dark ages, how they treat people. You know, the Japanese people can go in and interrogate you for hours, and they did that to Ghosn, trying to get him to confess, and, you know, just somehow the way they treat him was almost like a torture kind of way. So it's kind of interesting, but Carlos Ghosn recently hired a new defense team. He replaced his whole team and he got a whole new team because he needed somebody to be a little bit more aggressive. And the guy that they hired, his name is Junichiro Hironaka.
Oh yeah, it rolls off the tongue.
Junichiro Hironaka. And they nicknamed him the Razor because apparently he's got some real cutting questions. So it's starting to say that, you know, hey, this is not a Ghosn problem. This is a Nissan internal problem that they should have been involved in a civil case, not a criminal case. So that whole where, you know, Nissan, the coup going on at Nissan may get some credit going on here. So we're going to have to see what happens. So now that the new legal team is in there, he has a chance to talk to them more. He said that he can deny being interrogated by prosecutors. He can meet now with his lawyer for prolonged periods. So it sounds like it's getting a little bit better for him. I still don't think he's had a chance to see his family, you know, outside of being in the courtroom where they've had a chance to see him. But it's kind of interesting how they're trying to turn this around and blame it on Nissan. And that's not good for Nissan because, you know, in Japan, when you do things wrong, you still have a face that you have to present. And if you lose face with the people, you don't look good. And it doesn't bode well for your product. So that's kind of interesting to see how the defense team is turning around to make it look like Nissan is losing face with people. Mm. And this is, you know, ridiculous misconduct on their part versus the part of Ghosn and the other guy, Greg Kelly, who was a director, American director at Nissan, who says he's partially at fault for doing this too. Mm. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's a little bit of law. It's a little bit of maybe some backhanded backroom deals of coups. You know, it's a little bit of this. So, it's interesting to see what's going to happen. If he loses and he goes to trial, he could face up to 10 years in prison. And that's a long time in a Japanese prison, you know, which is interesting. So, you know, all we can do is wait and see what happens with this. So,
so maybe give a little bit of a backstory to the folks that don't know about Carlos Ghosn and why he's in there in the first place. Just a minute or two.
Well, Carlos Ghosn has been, you know, ahead of Nissan Renault for many years. And I think the goal that he was trying to do was do a little bit more integration, a little bit more merging of the companies. And I think the heads of state in Japan didn't like that. They didn't want to be, you know, a big giant conglomerate merging. And so I think they might have concocted ways and had him followed and did everything they could to try to find out, you know, how is he misrepresenting the company, because they're saying that he, like, took money and spent it without really having good cause to spend the money on personal items. And he's got five houses and vacations, ridiculous vacations that he took, that, you know, basically misappropriation of funds of the Nissan business. So
right.
he denies it. You know, he said everything was done above board. So that's kind of the fight that's going on right now with this. And it's just really, really fascinating, because they arrested him, what, 4 months ago before Christmas. So, you know, they said he lost like 15 pounds. He's, you know, he was subject to constant interrogation. And I'm sure it was not pretty interrogation. I'm sure that was very strict and very tough and, you know, partially starving him. He was in a room with, I don't think he even had a bed. I think he just had a mattress on the floor. You know, everything that you can do to try to break down prisoners. It's almost like they were interrogating him as a prisoner of war, kind of, man, the way the Japanese used to do it. So
sounds like how my wife treats me. I got a bed on the mattress on the floor and barely feeds me. I don't know. This doesn't sound so bad to me, actually.
Yeah,
I'm used to it by now.
Well, you could probably offer to change places with Carlos.
It's the diet I need.
Actually, wow. Now they even let him, he's actually can receive visitors now too. So that's a nice thing to be able to see your family. But his wife has been speaking out also and saying that this is just a farce and it's just horrible. And I'm on Team Ghosn. I want to see him, because you know, you and I have met him. We've talked to him.
Yep.
We know how intelligent he is. He speaks five languages. He's Brazilian born. I think he has I think he's a French citizen. It's all different. He's definitely a global man. There's no doubt about it. So for him to do something this dumb, because he's so smart, just doesn't make sense. It doesn't put two and two together is the problem. So,
well, it's, again, another one of the sagas in the automotive industry. You have guys like Elon Musk, interesting to watch. You have Carlos Ghosn. When we come back, we're going to talk about some news that has to do with actual cars, because there's a car company out there that is known for its amazing engineering. And recently its forward crash warning system didn't work. And I think it'll surprise all of you. And, you know, it comes back to, again, when I was thinking, you talked about Ghosn's attorney, the Razor. Maybe they nicknamed him that because he doesn't know how to shave very well. And he always nicked himself. You know, who knows?
Anyway. I don't know.
Well, it's better than his last attorney was named Fingernail Eddie. So I don't know. You know, we'll take a break. You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. She's BJ Colleen. Our show brought to you in part by Dodge. Not imported. How do you like that? Domestic, not domesticated. See, I looked at the word domestic, and then my mouth said import. That's how I work. I'm a knucklehead. We'll be right back.
No one ever said, give it a bit. No one ever said, give it less. We say, give it everything. The world wasn't built by half measures, by the half-hearted. So when we set out to build our boldest SUV ever, we didn't hold anything back. Introducing the all-new Telluride. Kia. Give it everything. Expected spring 2019 in limited quantities.
This song is called There She Goes Again, and BJ Colleen is joining us, and there she goes again. She's got good news, good information. So where I just kind of BS, she actually brings the real stuff to the table. Thank you for that, BJ.
My pleasure. That's what I'm here for.
Well, you know, we got guys like Richard Rollins, pure BS, you know. I mean, it's like, so, I mean, you got to bring some real information, but thank you.
It's like having a second husband. I got to keep you guys all in line, you know, crack the whip. Somebody's got to do it.
Speaking of your husband,
Yes.
The outfit he wore on your 70s cruise was the best. I mean, I'm going to get that blown up to a full wall size photograph and put it in my office. Anyway, I should post that, but I know Scott wouldn't appreciate it. But anyway.
His gold shoes were the best.
Gold shoes, shirt unbuttoned down to his belly button. I mean, you know, come on.
Gold chain.
Yeah, it was just awesome. Anyway, so what else are we talking about here?
All right. So everybody knows that there's really basically two safety organizations out there that, you know, test cars. And one is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which is NHTSA, which gives their 5-star crash test rating. And the other one is the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, or IIHS. And if you want to visit their website and check out everything I'm talking about, it's IIHS.org. And Insurance Institute for Highway Safety started because they were trying to see how all the vehicles are so they can tell the insurance companies how much, you know, they should be charging for insurance, depending on how crashworthy they are. So they do vary tests throughout the year, and they just did one test on small crossover vehicles. And the ones we're talking about are things like the CRV and the Ford Edge and vehicles like that. So they just tested 11 models from 2018 and 2019 model years. And the testing that they did was basically pedestrian crash prevention.
Right.
So if somebody crosses the road in front of you, walks out in front of you, and the vehicle comes up, is the vehicle going to stop? You know, is it going to hurt the pedestrian? How does that work? So they did a bunch of testing, and the vehicles that came out on top were the Honda CR-V, the Subaru Forester, Toyota RAV4, and the Volvo XC40. They all scored the top superior rating, which means, you know, they were able to stop in time, or you know, and only maybe just touch the guy, or stopped and perfectly and didn't hit the pedestrian at all.
Without any interaction from the driver of the car.
That is correct, with the automatic systems on there. So the auto brake detection systems and things like that. Now, again, everybody should keep in mind that, you know, you're not going to defy the laws of physics. If you're going 100 miles an hour and the guy steps off the curb in front of you, no safety system out there is going to prevent any kind of injury. So you still got to pay attention. There's, you know, just because they have these systems on the cars doesn't mean you can just jump in front of a car. Because people will do that. We know that, right? So the next vehicles that got the mid-grade advanced rating were the Chevrolet Equinox, Hyundai Kona, the Kia Sportage, Mazda CX-9, and Nissan Rogue, so that's kind of nice. The Mitsubishi Outlander scored the lowest, which is a basic rating, and the BMW X1, which is their little small CUV, basically plowed through the dummy so hard that IHS gave it a zero rating.
Whoa! Wow! It must have been a malfunction, let's hope, for BMW's sake.
I hope so, but, you know, it's interesting. They tested it at 37 miles per hour. It was the only car that had minimal to no speed reduction during any of the tests, is what the IIHS said. So that's kind of bad. Now, the Mitsubishi Outlander actually earned a superior rating for the braking system when detecting other vehicles, but into an adult, it still ran into them at roughly 6 miles per hour. So, you know, the problem is these systems are available. They're not standard. They're optional on many cars, but you have to decide because they're not cheap. They usually are packaged together with some other features. So I think the Honda and maybe Subaru, maybe Toyota, and maybe even Volvo, the ones that did well, all have it as standard features. But I'd have to double check that. Yeah. But that's a big plus. But the BMW, it does not look good for them. I mean, wow. That's not a cheap vehicle either. So.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, if you think about our careers in this automotive world, mine spans 40 years. And I come from a very analog place, as do you. And it's interesting that here we are complaining that the car won't stop itself. You know, I'm picking my nose, eating my lunch. That could be the same job right there, but I'm not paying attention. And somebody walks across or a little kid jumps out and the stupid car didn't stop. What a stupid car. There's still a loose nut behind the wheel, everybody. You got to pay attention.
Yes.
So go out into the world as you drive your cars. Pay attention. Don't eat your lunch and pick your nose or do the both at the same time. Don't make one the other. Am I going too far on that one? Anyway.
Yeah.
BJ, thank you. You're the best. You always bring such great information. Thank you.
My pleasure, Alan. Thank you.
I'm Alan Taylor. We are here every week talking about cars. You can find us online at thedrivewithalantaylor.com, on the Facebook page of The Drive with Alan Taylor, and or right here. Next week, same time, same channel, or on our podcast. We'll see you then. The big news from Subaru is the all-new three-row Ascent. It's the biggest SUV from Subaru ever. There's room for 7 or 8 passengers with a choice of second-row captain's chairs or bench seating. It'll tow up to 5,000 pounds. It has the interior space you need for your whole crew, and it gets you where you want to go with the safety of a Subaru, including standard symmetrical all-wheel drive. The all-new three-row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Maximum towing capacity varies by trim level, and trailer brakes may be required. See your retailer for details.